Now, welcome back to the program. Patrick Kerwin is a teacher at Arts Golden Amora in Tramore in County Waterford and recently set up the Irish Schools Sustainability Network, the ISSN. When I say recently, it was back in 2021. And the idea was to bring schools together to tackle what he sees as a culture of apathy and acceptance with regards to climate change. Patrick joins me by Zoom this evening from County Waterford. Patrick, it's good to talk to you and thank you very much for talking to us on the programme today. How are you?
I'm very good, Barry. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Not at all. I don't know who Barry is, but we send our regards to Barry. How's that?
Sorry.
That's all right. Patrick, this sounds really fascinating, and it is also very good to see that the young people in the school have got behind it. And I'm referring to an RTE report that was done some weeks ago when you, in the report, said, you know, we can talk about the Ukraine, we can talk about COVID-19, but we can't talk about climate. Is that really still the situation in 2022?
Yes, unfortunately. And I think it's interesting because when I first started off the founded the network, and I was trying to link with people who are kind of working in this area. I remember actually one kind of a prominent kind of person or influencer who works in this area was worried that, you know, starting a new network might dilute what's already there. And I was saying to him, actually, like, it's extraordinary, you know, how we are all in our own echo chambers. And if you step outside those echo chambers, your own bubble, then you actually realize that actually people don't have a clue of what's going on. So I'm sitting here at home in Lady Bryan in Waterford. And when I speak to my neighbors, climate and the biodiversity crisis just doesn't enter into their consciousness. And when I talk to my students, now we've moved on a little bit in school. In our school, you know, we've done a little bit of work on this. Now, I would say our wheels are only touching the ground.
Okay.
We have a lot of progress to make, huge amounts of progress to make. But when I talk to the staff in school, it's not on their radar. When I talk to the students, especially initially, they thought this is something that's going to affect another generation. And actually, staff do too.
Wow. That was part of my question, because, you know, when a new initiative is started in any school, it comes from the staff room primarily. Is teachers talk about something. Did you notice this, or have you noticed the lack of that, or whatever? And this is where it comes from. So this is something that you realized from talking to the students and the staff. And what reaction did you get when you said to your colleagues, I'm starting this thing, we're going to call it the ISSN? What was the reaction?
Well, it wasn't something really kind of I discussed with colleagues, because I had discussions around climate and nature with them. But to be honest with you, and this is just the case, I think, all over the world. You know, this is not the case of Patrick Kerwin in yeah. Waterford, mm-hmm. You know, and it's the case with other teachers in the network in their schools, is that when you have these conversations, one, you feel guilty about actually having them, because you know that nobody wants to talk about them, you know, and so it's very difficult to have those chats. And what I wasn't necessarily kind of trying to get people on board in my school, but to identify champions and individuals in my school, but other schools really who are kind of like, who want to work on this. Okay. And I say that because there's very few people who are in schools who are working on it. And when I say working on it, are putting this front and center of what they do and going beyond covering climate change in three lessons in a 3-year cycle.
Where did you start then? How did you get this moving?
So I launched this biodiversity champion challenge during lockdown. And that was basically to try and get students to reimagine their own garden spaces at home and try and bring the action away from school. And of course, they weren't in school anyway. So I was talking to other teachers about that and sharing some resources and ideas in a network of schools that I'm in. And then I basically just said, look, would anybody be interested in starting an Irish School Sustainability Network? Because this is quite a lonely space in which to work.
Yeah.
And it's quite isolating. And if nobody wants to talk to you, you know, it can be deflating. So let's come together, share ideas and resources. And so I had my first meeting with one school. And then I put the message out on Twitter, and then some other people joined us. And then we were 14 schools by the end of last year. And now we have about 28 schools, but it's small. And I would say that there's a core group who come all the time, but it's a guilt-free zone. So, you know, you can come as a teacher with your students and for a few meetings and drop off and come back. You know, it's very kind of fluid. But if you want that space, it's basically there.
Have you aims? Have you got objectives, you know, that you specifically want to achieve in this?
I think there's lots of different aims. But I suppose really the main aim is to really revolutionize the education system. And that's not something we're going to do, you know, on our own. That's something but we want to basically switch on lights all over the island.
Okay.
And that's by working with educational organizations. It's by working with principal associations. So we're working with one association, which is a national association of principals and deputy principals, which is for secondary schools. Uh-huh. And we're connecting with individuals and saying, look, do you actually know what's going on? And we're having those conversations. And the interesting thing is, when you do have those conversations, the first thing people ask when they actually get it is like, what can we do about it? Mm-hmm. And then you have a conversation. So they're going to have their conference this year in October will be sustainability themed. And we also are working with education support centres around Ireland. And they are the ones who deliver training in schools or training for schools. And there's 21 of them around Ireland. And, you know, you might have an amalgamation of a couple of different counties coming together under one education support centre. And they, which has been great, based on, so just at the end of last year, at the last academic year, and we had only started in March, we said that let's do something for COP26. So we had a climate and nature summit for primary and secondary schools in Ireland. And it was brilliant. We had the Worldwide Fund for Nature coming on board, Eco UNESCO, Green Schools, Concern, lots of organizations and individuals. And I couldn't believe it. I was really surprised. We thought we might get like 100 schools, mm-hmm. but we ended up getting over 2,500 schools involved.
Wow.
And we had over 3,000 teachers registered, and there was 11,000 views of the sessions. And that's like each view is a class group.
Right.
So it was really good. And it was like, we learned a lot from it, and it was just about kind of getting the initial word out of there. And it's not a silver bullet. It was just something to kind of raise awareness while world leaders coming together to accelerate climate action. But after that process, the education support centres who we got on board with this, they formed their own climate action group. And because they themselves weren't actually thinking about this, or if they were, they were thinking about individually and not collectively what they could do.
Okay. How did you bring students on board, or was that easy? Because my opinion would be that young people, teenagers, they're far more clued into it than people my age would be, and you and I would be. There'd be a big difference in our age. But am I right? And was it easy to bring them on, or was it something that you had to sell to them?
It's something I had to sell.
Okay.
It's not, there is a kind of a misconception, I think, out there. Because you see a youth movement in the news, it's easy to get the impression that all youth are hyperactivated. But youth are the same as adults. You know, and by the way, the youth movement have done an incredible job of raising awareness. And I am absolutely and utterly in awe of these young people who are behaving more in a more mature way than the adults are around this, and you know, and thinking about strategy and how to put levers in place to get people on board. But in our school, students aren't aware. And again, when you have that conversation with them, there's a, you know, it comes with like, oh my God, he's going to talk about climate. And so sometimes, you know, like I run an environmental influencer course.
Okay.
And for some of those lessons, it's an 8-week course. And like I am, you know, putting on a drama performance.
Okay.
And I'm dancing around the room, because when there is no energy in the room, you have to create that energy. And then it's, you know, you get a bit of a kind of a discussion going, and people get into it. But actually, like what's really interesting is there are sixth year students. So these are 17, 18 year olds who couldn't articulate the link between fossil fuels, carbon dioxide, electricity, energy, and global warming. And so the students don't understand it. And what's really interesting is that they don't want to talk about climate, but they think they know it. But when you ask them to articulate it, they can't articulate basic science.
Okay.
So, but then when you do have a chat about it and you get them enthused, you know, you'll get individuals who come on board and they go from 0 to 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And they really, I mean, they actually get an awful lot from taking action, because they're, you know, building their confidence, their communication skills, leadership. They're socializing, they're, you know, working with other students, and they know that they're behind something really important and something that they're self-invested in.
Does the likes of Greta Thunberg come into the equation with the young people? Or is that just new stuff?
I think it's, I don't, it's really interesting, I suppose, and we all have this, but we all, when you meet someone for the first time, you know, we all subconsciously measure ourselves up against individuals, and you kind of see where you're placed beside them. And if the person is completely and utterly outside of your realm with maybe education or money or fame or whatever it is, if you feel like they're completely and utterly beyond you, then it's very hard to relate to them. So it's something that you don't really kind of don't think about. And I think there's a lot of kids who think she's amazing, and she is, but they, you know, they just think Greta Thunberg is someone who's incredibly special and amazing. And, oh my God, I could never do that. Or could never, you know, it's just, and, you know, I think I explained to them as well that obviously Greta didn't set out to do everything that she's done. She's made a move, and look at what's happened. And she is incredibly articulate, and she's inspirational. But they can be inspirational in their own locality. They mightn't feel like they can change the world, but they can change their own family dynamics. They can change their own garden. They can, you know, change their own school. You can bring it down to something a bit smaller.
You're based in Waterford. Waterford would be outside the Pale, obviously, the Pale being Dublin. And a lot of controversy recently on the turf wars. And there'd be many areas in Waterford that would rely heavily on the turf and the ability to be able to go and do that, you know, cut the turf and to sell it or to give it to other people. Do your students, now that they have been involved with the network, do they have a better understanding of why Minister Eamon Ryan is trying to get rid of the turf and the smoky coal out of the equation. He may not be doing it the correct way, but do they understand more deeply why he is?
They would if they knew that that was going on. Yes. So we meet as a network once a month. And we would, so the next meeting that we have is on Thursday. And in our climate and nature news section, that's one thing that we will talk about. Last week in the classes that I had, now the students who are in the sustainability group in school who are part of the ISSN, I might necessarily teach them.
Okay.
But if they are part of my class, I would have had like a lesson, you know, the last 2 weeks, just ad hoc on the turf wars and, you know, the heat waves in India.
Right.
And we discuss, you know, like the nonsense, you know, headlines in the newspapers that Eamon Ryan is bringing down the government with, you know, his statements and, you know, the craziness of that, you know, in a context where there's a billion people in India who are suffering from heat stress and, you know, with wheat crops failing. And also in a context in Ireland where, you know, air pollution is causing 1,300 early deaths a year. So the problem here really is, to address your question, is that they do have an understanding, and they also have a real understanding of, you know, well, some understanding of a just transition. So they would actually be, you know, concerned about those people in those communities who are cutting turf on a small commercial scale, and worried about, okay, well, what about their income? And what about the people locally who are actually getting turf cheaper and can, you know, and can heat their homes, and particularly in this energy crisis, are now going to be in trouble if that, like in next winter, if they can't buy turf locally. So they empathize with that. And what it comes back to is, you know, obviously poor strategy with the government.
And communication, also, bad communication, yeah.
Yeah, bad communication with the media as well. Rolling it right back, we are not teaching the kids about this. The kids don't, across the board, the kids are not tuned into politics. I wasn't tuned into politics when I was their age. I didn't have a clue of what was going on outside my own world. You know, I was completely, you know, and, you know, I would say most adults are asleep. You know, we don't really are not kind of engaging with this unless it actually directly affects us. So that's something I think our education system, and I don't think it's just in Ireland, I think it's across the board, because I worked in the UK for a long time too. It's not fit for purpose, and it doesn't engage students with what's going on locally at a time when they really, really need to be engaged.
So what do you do at the network then when you meet? I know that there are about 25 schools across Ireland and that you meet by Zoom, but you do practical things as well, don't you?
So, yeah, we have a kind of a format to the meeting. So we, you know, as I said, we'd have an introduction with kind of climate nature news and what's going on. And then we might have a bit of a fun activity where, you know, people go into breakout rooms and discuss something or do the game and come back. And I suppose in a way, the meeting, as best we can, is a kind of a template for teachers and students in the meeting to use whatever's that we've used in the meeting and bring it back to their classes, and they can use it there if they want to. And then we might showcase some work that's going on in particular schools, and then there's work on joint projects. So for example, we're working on the Climate and Nature Summit,
okay,
which is happening during COP27, and we're kind of putting titles out there to see what would pique the interest of the students. So we have a climate psychologist doing a talk on why are we all weirdos. You know, we're trying to get someone to do a talk on our government paying big business to kill us. And that's all about kind of fossil fuel subsidies.
Okay.
And we're trying to I suppose there's, you know, a group of kids who would be interested in these things, but then there's, we're trying to bring in a wider audience. But we also do, we worked this year on the Plant to Planet campaign. Mm. So that was about getting students to plant trees in their own gardens at home. So we had a target of getting 10% of students and staff in school planting a tree at home. And the idea was to bring climate and nature conversations back to their own houses. So the students, I mean, they did an incredible amount of awareness raising work. So they had, you know, poster campaigns in school. They had a seven part series of climate and nature conversations on Waterford local radio. Brilliant. And all the students in the network fed into that. They gave a stellar presentation to students in the school or every class on the campaign. They talked about how, you know, in Ireland, tree cover is 11%, but only, you know, 1% of that is native trees. And they talked about how, you know, trees are good for climate adaptation, mitigation, and stemming biodiversity loss. Mm. So, there, you know, there's, and talking about what, you know, are the best trees to plant in a small urban garden and how to plant them and how to take care of them. And what was really interesting, I think, coming out from that was, one, how difficult it is to work with people. Because the kids are working with different students in different schools. So they had to come together on their own time to have Zoom meetings. And, you know, that's even just trying to orchestrate that is difficult. And if you actually want to change a culture, which we haven't, it takes a huge amount of grit and it takes a long time. But they did, they found, like, you know, the more energy they put into it, the more people they got on board. And they had, you know, in our school alone, we had 600 trees that were planted.
Brilliant.
You know, in people's own gardens. And that's brilliant. And it also showed the power of collective action. Because you might think, like, you know, they say this all the time, what does, you know, can one person do?
Okay.
If I switch off my lights or if I, you know, walk to school, what good does that do? And we say it helps to create a culture, to build a culture. Mm. And, you know, look, one person planting a tree, maybe not a big deal, but 600 people, that's amazing. And so I think we learned a lot from it. And we'll see where we go to next with it.
Okay. I'm not going to delay you much longer. Question just in relation to the Department of Education. Is there a recognition at department level that there needs to be more done in the classroom for climate change?
I think there is a recognition, without a doubt. So what's really interesting, in the UK, they're just talking about bringing sustainability into the curriculum and they're figuring out how to do that. In Ireland, sustainability is in the new junior cycle curriculum, and it has been there for probably 4 or 5 years. So, you know, the department are aware that this is important.
Okay.
But what's really interesting is the message hasn't landed with staff or students. You know, if you actually even ask, you know, people, what does sustainability mean? I think they'd find it hard to articulate it.
Okay.
And they're bringing a new Lead and Search course in 2024, which is optional, and it's climate and sustainability. But the problem is you can't opt out of climate change. So everyone needs that education. And in a context where generally people don't know what's going on, the magnitude of what's going on, or the urgency needed for action, you need to create an emergency situation.
Okay.
Just like with COVID. And that means like inset in-service training days for staff, and getting them up to speed what's going on, making sure that they know what the timelines are and how, and really being explicit about why this education is important. Because it's not about, you know, teaching students so that when, you know, they grow up to be in the positions of power that we are in now, mm-hmm. that they're going to make change. That's not going to happen because it's going to be too late. But it's about actually making sure that when they see, we know what's coming. Sure, it's already here, you know, in the summer, the floods, the droughts, the wildfires across the world. When they see this, they kind of understand what's going on and they know the role that they're playing in their community to make change. And so they feel a sense of some kind of sense of agency around it. So really, actually, a big part of it is well-being, you know, and making sure we're safeguarding the students.
Okay.
But the other thing is what you do in school leaches out into the wider community. And in a context where, you know, adults aren't getting that education from the media as much as they should be, as that we had with COVID every night on the news, mm-hmm. Then that education is really important.
Some of the students that you have as part of your network will be doing their leaving certificate this year, and they'll be going to college, or they'll be going to work, or they'll be going to live elsewhere. Can they still be part of your network if they're outside the school system?
Yes, I think that's an interesting one. I think we have to navigate that because okay. It's the whole safeguarding issues when you've got older students who are not teachers, you know, joining calls. But students who we've connected with this year who run a climate cafe in school and who have been really like just activated in the last year are doing some stellar work, and we're talking about how we can kind of continue that afterwards.
Okay. And do you know, is there any network similar to yours anywhere across Europe or anywhere in the world?
So actually, there's a really established network in the UK, and it's called the UK School Sustainability Network. And when I was teaching in London, there is an incredible woman called Jessica Tipton, who approached me, and she brought her students from her school over to visit mine. And we had a meeting, and she started up a West London Eco-Schools network, starting with the two of her schools. And then Jess is an absolute powerhouse. And this grew to a London Schools Eco Network. And now there's a UK-wide Eco Network where there's networks popping up in different cities and counties. And there's like a WhatsApp group, which I can't even keep abreast of, because it's amazing. It's wonderful. There's so much chat on this group. It's just, and they are making incredible roads in terms of, they brought a group of students to COP26. And they've been also kind of talking to the government about kind of what needs to happen and consulting on the new guidelines. So they're doing really, really good work.
There might be some interested parties in Spain. You'd never know. If there is, and if they'd like to find out more, is there a contact? Is there a website? Is there something we can give them?
So we will have a website that will probably go live in the next week or two. It's www.issn.ie.
Okay.
But if they type in Irish School Sustainability Network or UK School Sustainability Network, they'll find a UK website, and there's lots of resources on there, I think, that would help them.
Okay. Well, listen, it sounds fantastic. You're doing Trojan work, and let's hope that the network will continue to grow and grow for a long time. Patrick Kerwin from Ort School na Móra, the founder of the Irish School Sustainability Network, thanks for talking to us, and good luck with the rest of it.
Sure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for getting the name right.